Welcome. I'm Sebastian Mahfood, and you're listening to WCAT Radio, the on-air wing of En Route Books and Media, bringing you the dulcet sounds of Catholic wisdom with our host, Bob Olson, who will now introduce today's show and speaker.
WCAT Radio presents, I Thought You'd Like to Know This, a very interesting program featuring some outstanding people who may have a message for you. And our guest tonight is Patrick S.J. Carmack, J.D., is founder of the Great Books Academy and the Angelicum Academy Homeschool Program, executive director of the Adler Aquinas Institute and the Ignatius Angelicum Liberal Studies Program. So, it's good to have you on the program, Pat. So, thanks for being here.
Great to be on. Thanks for having me.
Now, you have quite a background there, and we'll talk more about some of those things. But I know it's been a while, but were you brought up as a child in the Catholic Church? Were you a cradle Catholic?
Yes, all Irish ancestry.
Can you tell us just a little bit about your childhood?
Let's see. I was born in Texas, but raised in Oklahoma City, and went to a Catholic grade school, Catholic high school, and then later got a law degree from went partly to the University of Oklahoma, then Oklahoma City University, and then subsequently studied at various other universities, including the Angelicum in Rome. I was in the practice of law for a number of years, and later on transitioned that into education. So I run an educational foundation as well.
Okay. You mentioned the Angelicum. We have a program on Mondays at 2 o'clock Eastern Time with a student at the Angelicum in Rome.
Oh, wonderful.
Every Monday.
Her yeah, it's a great institution.
Natalia Yuzhin.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of interesting. But in 2000, you founded two of what many regard as the premier homeschool programs in the U.S. So tell us a little about them and why they were founded.
Well, a number of, pardon me, my friends and I happened to have children at that time, which were in school or reaching school age, and we weren't happy with what they were being exposed to, and also with the low level of academic, you know, the quality of the materials and so on that they were studying. So we all took that pretty seriously, and I met with Mortimer Adler in 1999 and then in 2000, 3 days each, and he was, of course, the editor of Encyclopedia Britannica, Great Books of the Western World. He was an educational philosopher. He wrote about 50 books on it. Just a brilliant man. For folks that remember Firing Line, Buckley's old show, he was on it 29 times. He was the most frequent guest.
Yeah, I remember that.
Just a brilliant man. And so he had promoted the study of the great books of the Western tradition, Western civilization, in education. Pardon me, I've got a bit of a cough today. I apologize. So I went and met with him, and so did these two other people who helped form these organizations back in 2000. And the entire orientation of them was towards the great books, studying it in high school, which may surprise a lot of people because most Great Books programs are offered in colleges, like Thomas Aquinas College in Ojai, and St. John's in Annapolis and Santa Fe, and so on. And 100 colleges and universities have some truncated version of a four-year Great Books program. But Adler was very adamant it'd be done in high school for a number of reasons, and so we did that. And we offered it in high school online, and we've been doing that now. This is our 18th year. And in order to address younger students, we sort of reverse engineered from that. Well, if they're going to be studying the great books in ninth grade, what should they study in eighth grade? And then if that in eighth, what in seventh? And so on, back down all the way to nursery. So the homeschool programs actually begin in nursery and go all the way up through 12th grade and now into college. So we offer 60 hours of college credit. And we do that in association with colleges and universities that can provide degrees, including Holy Apostles College. But that's how we got started. It was really to find out and to offer to our own children the best education possible. And for that, we went to the best educator in the U.S., which was Mortimer Adler. He's now deceased. And by the way, he's one of those stories, like Constantine, he converted. He was 98 and converted to the Catholic Church and passed away within the year.
Well, I remember I used to read about some of the things that young people were studying back quite a few years ago in the early days of this country, and it seemed like they were studying a heavier subject at that time in the younger grades.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Actually, they didn't have grades, so to speak. That's more or less an addition that's come along with mass compulsory public education in the U.S. They would master material and move on, but they wouldn't be held back because their peers hadn't caught up with them yet. They would move on to whatever was of interest to them at the time. So if they finished one classic, they moved on at that time, for instance, or if they knew Latin sufficiently, to begin reading the next thing, then they would move on to that. So the grading systems actually has its origins in the military in Prussia. That's kind of a long story, but it's not an American institution, really. It has become so, of course. But yeah, you're right. You know, just to give you an example, like in the American Revolution, people don't know this, but when we won the Revolution, everybody knows who Alexander Hamilton was, but very few know at the time he was 20 years old. Aaron Burr was 21. Light Horse Harry Lee, who was Robert E. Lee's father, was 21. And Lafayette was 19, just to give you some examples. And yet they were generally far better educated than our college graduates. Most of them knew Latin. Many of them knew Greek. They were very familiar with the great classics of Greece and Rome. This is an incredible education. We had the finest educated population in the world at that time. And why we wound up where we are today is a real interesting set of circumstances. But you're right, it was a highly educated group of founders.
Well, this seems to be quite a challenging undertaking here.
Well, it is. Education is so broad that it's, you have to have a lot of time available to devote to it to figure out what's going on in the educational system now, what might be changed for the better, what's applicable to your child, and so on. So it's a very daunting experience for people who consider homeschooling, which has nonetheless grown to well over 2 million students. Some estimates place it around 2.8 million. It's difficult to know because the statistics aren't kept in the same way as they are in the public schools, of course. But it is a very difficult thing to put together, and that's why we did this and made it available to others, because we found it so daunting that after we'd put the effort in to do it well, or what we think is well, we wanted to help other parents, and that's what we're doing.
There is a trend toward homeschooling, a pretty good trend.
Yeah, and there's several trends in education right now that are good. They're happy trends. One of them is toward homeschooling. Of course, that's been going on since about 1980 or so. It began when parents became concerned about the moral environment in public schools, or more properly, the immoral environment. But it really took off at Columbine. You remember the Columbine Massacre?
Oh, yes.
That took place not far from here in Denver, which was an experimental high school, by the way. They're using a very progressive educational model there.
Was it an experimental program before the shooting?
Yes, and some people have attributed that may have contributed to it. In any case, it obviously severely damaged the reputation of that school and that approach. But that was in 1999. Homeschooling went from, I think it was under 1 million to over 2 million within a few years.
Wow.
Because of the drumbeat that the media gave to that massacre, which at the time was very shocking. Now it's almost a commonplace.
Yep.
But at the time it went on for months. What happened? Why did it happen? And so on. And it scared parents, and to some degree rightly so. And they, very many shifted to homeschooling. They took their kids out of the schools. They said, if this is what's happening in school, we want nothing of it. And that really was a sea change in homeschooling. And those parents left, you know, because of the, partly because of a fear factor, but also because they just saw the results, you know. And they wanted higher standards. So homeschooling shifted then from an average of families which were in the lower socioeconomic measures to higher, above average. So, for instance, before that, the homeschooling parents on average had lower average in, of college completed. Afterwards, it was higher. You know, and there's a whole lot of standards. They used number of books at home, income level, all kinds of things. It all, after Columbine, it all went well above the average scale. So that shifted. Then they wanted quality at that time. And that's right when we founded in 2000 the Great Books Academy and the Angelicum Academy in the year 2000. And we've grown every year since. And it's because we're offering the highest quality you can get, which is not a comment about us as much as it is about the books we use. We use the greatest works. You know, they're typically called the great books.
Yes.
That's a term Adler more or less coined. In any case, he popularized it to study the great classics of Western civilization, beginning with Homer and the Bible, and right on up to Einstein and so on. And so we do that in a four-year program. And obviously, based on that history I just mentioned about the, how the homeschooling environment's changed, that hit at the right time for people to appreciate it. And so it's been a very successful program, and we've been able to helpfully help a lot of kids. You know, in high school they read 120 great books with us, or major excerpts if it's particularly difficult, like, say, Aristotle or something like that.
That's I was checking out your website there for the Angelicum Academy and the Great Books Academy there, and it's this is a online program.
Yes, it's kind of a it's a blended program really. Angelicum, the Angelicum Academy, which is angelicum.net. Is a Catholic program, specifically Catholic. The Great Books Academy is designed for use partly in charter schools, and as a consequence, it cannot have, by law, specifically religious content. Mm-hmm. However, as great books, the students study the same books. I mean, they read the Bible. They can read Augustine. They can read the Summa Theologica and so forth, which we, they do all of that. But they read 120 books, and of course, like I said, it begins with Homer. So, you know, the diet in American high schools, in literature, since World War II has consisted of approximately 10 books. And I'll name a few of them, you'll recognize them, you know, it's To Kill a Mockingbird, The Great Gatsby of Mice and Men, a dystopia like 1984, Brave New World, just a handful of books like that, Lord of the Flies. And almost everybody's read those, and that's also almost all anybody ever read in high school. If they were the really highbrow one, they may have gotten a Shakespeare play, usually Hamlet or Romeo and Juliet. And that's it. And by contrast, in our program, which is based on Adler's advice, and he promoted the Great Books Movement for 80 years, from 1922, when he was at Columbia and took the first courses of this kind, you know, they do 120 books compared to that thin soup I just mentioned. Interestingly, Common Core is cutting back the already thin soup of literature in public schools, which is largely followed by private schools, I might add, so that of the literature, 70% of it now is going to be what they call informational texts. And if the listener is not sure what that is, and I wasn't either, I had to research it, it means things like an EPA brochure or a Federal Reserve release. It's just, in other words, it's just largely government propaganda. And it's not novels, it's not imaginative literature, it's just, you know, what most of us throw away when we get it in the mail.
Some people would say maybe this is a little too much for younger students, great books.
Yeah, that's a very interesting question and one we do get. And the answer to that, I believe, is addressed by Adler and others, including Jacques Maritain, the famous Catholic philosopher, mm-hmm. and definitely by Adler and others. And that is that it is, you know, there used to be an old commercial, a mind is a terrible thing to waste. And that's what's happening in our high school years. Students around the age of 14 are perfectly capable of reading these works. As I say, some of them, you know, in excerpt fashion, but most of them, the whole work, and to ponder the great ideas that are contained in them. And we do them an enormous disservice by not exposing them to these great works. Stopping their intellectual and psychological development by having them just read a little tiny bit of literature. And as I mentioned, that, you know, these great founders of our nation, they were already well educated by the time that they led our nation into existence in their early 20s, and they had already read these works much earlier. I can give you an example. Adler was reading Plato and the dialogues, the Socratic dialogues, in his teens, and that told him other people can do it as well. And we've found in doing it for 18 years that that's definitely true. We have very, very few students who are unable to do it. It just almost never happens. Where they get misled a little bit is they think, well, they have to master this material. So if they read the Platonic dialogues like The Trial of Death and Socrates, they have to master that. They've got to really understand it thoroughly. Well, it's just not true. It's sufficient if they're exposed to it in that reading. If they get some basic concepts out of it, some basic ideas, if they're inspired by the character of Socrates, you know, and so on. And so that's what Adler said to do. So what we do is they're introduced to these books. Now, when you read it or I read it, we're going to get a whole lot more out of it, presumably, decades later. And they will, too. But at least they'll have been exposed to it. They'll have an idea it's out there. They'll see more or less the whole horizon of human intellectual activity. And that's what we're trying to do, and that's what we do accomplish. The notion that when kids leave high school or college, they're now well-educated is an illusion. It's simply not true. It can't be true of anybody. They can specialize. They may become an engineer, and really know engineering well, but to be broadly educated in all fields at that point is impossible, both due to their youth and inexperience and just to the quantity of what's been written. You know, there's over 1 million books released per year in the U.S. now, and nobody can study all of those, or even a small fraction. That's why we need guides, like things like Great Books programs, where wonderful scholars and saints have identified the works that have lasted generation after generation, like Homer and the Bible and so on, you know.
Well, we have a couple of young fellows in Minneapolis, St. Paul, who have had some connection with the Holy Apostles, and they're going to be starting a program here in a few weeks telling us about what they're doing in the parishes, that they're bringing Thomas Aquinas and things, people like that, into the confirmation classes and things.
That's
like
great.
That. Similar idea, only in the church.
Absolutely. give them the best. They won't get it all. They won't master it. Mm-hmm. You know, they won't have a completely comprehensive grasp of the topic, but they'll be inspired by it. And a few words or a few sentences may change their lives. You know, hand them a comic book and nothing will happen. And that's essentially what we're doing. It's an exaggeration, but in most of the schools. So we really want them to reach the point where they're reading the most, you know, the books that have been written by the sages of our civilization, sages, saints, scholars of our civilization. And so I'm all for that. If they want to introduce the Summa, that the Summa was written as a primer in theology. And, of course, it's endlessly profound and rereadable. But nonetheless, people can understand it. People go, oh, Aristotle sounds frightening and everything. Aristotle writes in a very simple fashion, really. You know, some of his topics are above the heads of people until they study it in depth. But most of it, anyone can read and go, yeah, I get that. That makes perfect sense. So I'm all for that trend. You know, to give you some empirical evidence about what's happening in the high school environment, everyone is aware that students can now take AP courses, advanced placement, in high school, and they go to college and get college credit, and they don't have to take it again. So in other words, they took a college level of that course in high school. IB does that, International Baccalaureate. CLEP does that. ACE does that, American Council on Education. There's dual enrollment in almost every high school now so that the students can go take college courses. So what is that all doing? It's all in the same trend. It's saying high school students can handle college-level material. So what's happened is at some point in our educational history, we basically dumbed down the material that's being used in high school. So it's kind of this intermediate level between what they learn in elementary or grammar school and college, and it's not necessary. They're perfectly capable by the late teens, 14 and up usually, of doing college-level work. There's no reason to, you know, endlessly protract adolescence, which, by the way, was a term introduced in this country in 1904 by Stanley Hall, who was one of the top Masons in the country. And it introduced this kind of notion there's this intermediate state, which there isn't. You know, there's the stage where you need to learn the grammars of every subject, how to read, how to write, how to calculate, and so on. And then once you've got those tools of learning, you want to apply them to something, and you don't want to apply it to mediocre stuff. Why would anybody want that? You want to apply it to the finest things that have been written. Now, of course, if it's something very technical, that's a different story. That's for specialization. But very few of these works are technical. Almost all of them are written for the average person. And so that's what's being recognized by the existence of these various programs I just mentioned, like AP and so on. And that's what we're doing. Really where it leads, what the trend is the abolition of high school as we know it. It shouldn't exist as it does. It's a waste of time. That's why students are terribly bored with it, why they get angry about it. They're being held back from studying the real thing, and they're being given fifth-rate textbooks by publishing companies that are doing it, you know, for their financial interest.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to expose them to the finest, the best, the greatest, and that's what we do, and that's what, in our opinion, every public high school should do, every private high school.
So what will education program look like then, like to say, with high school being eliminated?
Well, if you follow, again, the advice of Adler and Jacques Maritain and others, they began taking what people consider to be college-level courses in ninth grade. And so with us, they begin the study of the great books. So it's an interdisciplinary course which studies these great works. They could also take biology, chemistry, physics, which are the higher sciences. They can do in high school Algebra 1, Algebra 2, geometry. They can do trig, calculus, which they are in many cases, and getting college credit. So basically what we have to do is weed out these courses that they've created, these artificial things that aren't the highest at any level, and let the kids take as many of the college courses as they can, and just absolutely eliminate these other.
You mean like basket weaving, or?
Yeah, get rid of basket weaving. Get rid of all the courses on all the counseling they go through now. You know, all the indoctrination. It's all a huge waste of time, and it's nothing but social engineering, and we all know that. By the way, I think this DeVos, the new education secretary, she wants to allow parents to get the tax money that's been paid in for schools, and rather than hand it to some school that isn't going to perform properly, give it to the parents and let them pick where they want to use it. And that includes homeschooling. And that is a wonderful change. It's very needed. It's revolutionary in this country. Many other countries already have it. And that will speed up this process because nobody will pick mediocre, dumbed-down schools, whether they're private or public. So competition at that point will eliminate them over time. So hopefully that will be passed, and that will speed this up. But just to give you an example how pervasive this trend is, even the Obama administration introduced a program. They put $20 million in at the U.S. Department of Education, which is allowing underprivileged students to get vouchers to use in community college while they're in high school. And the rationale for it is very interesting. If you read the program, it says, studies have shown that high school students are not getting sufficiently challenging courses, which is exactly what we're talking about here. So they're saying, what's the solution? Let them take college courses. So I don't think they realize the implications of that, but I completely agree with it. Let them take college courses.
Yeah,
and so now we're doing that with Holy Apostles, by the way.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Now, while we're on that subject, what about your relationship with Holy Apostles?
Well, Holy Apostles has a very enlightened administration. They really do, and we've been working with them for several years now, and together we put together a program which allows these students to take sufficient college courses to earn an associate's degree by the conclusion of their 12th grade. So they have to earn their high school diploma, and when they do, if they've taken these other courses, which have substituted for about half of their high school courses, then they will have earned 60 credit hours toward college, and the 60 is sufficient for an associate's degree, an AA in liberal arts or in theology. And so we've laid out those courses for them. This is a real breakthrough. It's the only program of its kind in the country. But it's nothing more than a step ahead of the trend. It's not something that no one could conceive of or anything. It's really just, like I say, a step ahead, maybe two or three years ahead of where the trend is going as we gradually get rid of these inadequate courses in high schools and allow students to take more and more college courses. So if they get those 60 credits, and actually the way we have it set up, they can earn 75 college credits while in high school. They only need 60 for their AA, but they can earn 75 in this program so that when they get their associate's degree at the conclusion of 12th grade, they have to earn their high school diploma. That's due to accreditation standards. But then they can be awarded their AA right after that. But anyway, they'll need 45 credits more, because the minimum bachelor's degree in the United States is 120 credit hours, which is usually 40 courses. So they'll have 75 of those already. They'll need 45 more to get their bachelor's degree from Holy Apostles, and they can do that in 1 year. So they could go to summer school, fall and spring, 15 credits each, and they will have completed their bachelor's degree 1 year after completion of high school. So it's a wonderful program. It does exactly what ought to be done. It's what Adler, Mariton, and so many others have said, and ironically, the Obama administration. So, yeah, so it's a wonderful thing. And they get that way, they've earned their bachelor's degree at age 19, typically.
What a great use of the Internet, huh?
It is. It has some wonderful uses, and in our case, it allows professors who are teaching at different colleges and universities around the country, and we've even had foreign ones, to reach these students, regardless of where they live, just provided they have an internet connection. And we've had students from 40 different countries, but most of them are American. And also, I think in every state, maybe one or two, we haven't had one, but not, I wouldn't know which ones they weren't, but nearly every state. And it's a wonderful thing. And we started this last year. We had 20 students immediately. We didn't even have time to market it. The word got around. And it's going to be much more, our marketing to let people know about it, let parents and students know about it, will begin really in about 2 weeks. And so I think it's going to be enormously popular. You know.
Wow. I don't know if Sebastian has told you, but it is possible now, of course, online to get a master's degree at Holy Apostles. And they've been working with the state, and eventually it won't be too long, and you'll be able to get a doctor's degree online.
I knew about the master's degree. Sebastian's, of course, the vice president there, and he's very much on the cutting edge of online education. Almost all the studies have shown online education is at least equivalent to, and many studies have shown it's slightly better than in terms of, in the various ways they try to measure it, which are difficult. But the old notion that it's somehow inferior to physical presence education really is pretty much debunked. And so it's inevitable that one will be able to get a PhD online. You know, there may be some contact with the college, a visit, you know, and different things, you know, but that's just inevitable. So, they're ahead of the crowd on that one.
And of course, when we're talking about this, everybody knows about the college student loan crisis that we have right now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's gotten huge. It's growing exponentially. And the government's partly to blame for the problem because, you know, with the student loans, they've made them so attractive very many students have gotten these loans. But, of course, that's, with the law of supply and demand, it's pushed a lot of money into the hands of family and students who are looking for education, so it's allowed the colleges to push up their tuition rates, which they have done. And so the debt, consequently the amount they need to borrow, increases as well. So it's now, there's 44 million students and ex-students who now carry student loan debt. And whereas in days gone by, that would be paid off rather quickly, typically within a few years of graduation. The average person with carrying this debt of these 44 million people is now 40 years old. And there are people now who go their entire lifetime without paying off their student loan debt, which was unheard of, you know, a couple of decades ago. One of the things I heard is kind of, this is anecdotal, but I never even occurred to me this negative feature of it, and you may have heard of it, is I heard of a young lady who had so much debt that she and her fiancé called off their wedding because between the two of them the debt was going to be crushing, and they just felt financially they couldn't make a go of it, which was rather sad, obviously. And
well,
it's something I never even thought of, that somebody, you know, that it could have that kind of impact, but obviously it can, you know.
Now, your homeschooling program, where do you start with that? At what age?
Typically, the homeschooling program starts in the nursery. The Great Books program starts in ninth grade, which is the college-level credit. But we actually go from, we offer all the courses that basically anybody does, and then some, beginning in nursery. Of course, in those early grades, there's not a lot of courses. It's just a few. And so it starts more seriously in first grade. And then each year, what's part of the curriculum increases, the difficulty increases, obviously, and so on. But So we go through eighth grade, and then in the high school, they can begin taking college courses, as well as courses that are, you know, the traditional courses of science, math, geography, history, and so on. And it's a complete program, but with 60 college credit hours potentially, it's the most extensive and the most complete program, which is really what we wanted for parents, so they don't have to every year reevaluate everything and try to come up with a new curriculum, everything. It's already been done for them. It's a very flexible program in that we allow parents to use other, if they're using a math program they like, more power to them. We're happy about that. It's about education, not schooling. And in this country, the two have become conflated. So people think if you're not going to school, a brick-and-mortar school, you're not being educated. And, of course, that's nonsense. They're two entirely different words with different meanings. And what we're after is not schooling but education. If I could digress 1 second on the I forgot to mention, you had asked me about the student loan thing, crisis. Last year, the average cost of a 4-year private college bachelor's degree was around $160,000, around $40,000 a year. That's for residents. That includes room and board and tuition, fees, books, around $160,000, which is astonishing. Associate's degree I mentioned that they can earn in high school is under $15,000. And the bachelor's degree on top of that's another $15,000. So with this program we're doing, the Holy Apostles, they can earn their bachelor's degree for under $30,000 spread out over that time period, which is 5 years basically from ninth grade.
Wow.
Compared to over five times that in private colleges now. And even the more modest ones typically run around $25,000 to $30,000 a year, and that's the full cost of this. So that's one answer for families hoping to avoid, you know, a college debt trap. And that's one of the things we wanted to accomplish and still give, you know, the finest education we could. It really doesn't get any better in terms of what they read and learn than the great books, and then you combine it with theology and so forth. It's orthodox and reliable, and it's a combination that's pretty hard to beat.
Well, you said that Dr. Adler was at this for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Do you think what's happening right now was part of his vision? Do you think he went that far with it?
Adler had an expression. He said that the school system won't be reformed until we begin enforcing racketeering laws against the educational establishment. That's how little he thought of the current educational establishment in this country.
Yeah.
You know, we really have kind of a bifurcated one. For the very elite, we have elite boarding schools, which a lot of people aren't even aware exist. And we have, of course, everyone's very familiar with the Ivy League colleges and those that are near Ivy League. And if you go to those, if you manage to get in those one way or another, you're now part of the elite who's going to be trained largely. They're going to be familiar with the classics. They're going to understand. They're going to get basically a pretty good education. Everywhere else, it's been pretty much dumbed down. Now, there's exceptions, and some people may take offense at that, but it's simply the truth. You know, Ezra Pound had the remark that the whole point of modern education is to make sure most of the students never study the classics. They don't want them to be independent thinkers. You know, the corporate hand is very much involved in modern education, and it sets standards that have nothing to do with liberal education, that is to say, educating a well-rounded human being. And so that's a real serious problem. And Adler, in answer to your question specifically, very much wanted to return to genuine liberal education, educating our youth so that they can be well-rounded human beings. And that requires an exposure to a lot of different areas of education, which is done, again, within the finest works of our Western tradition. the great books is just a collective work, you know, now. But if you look at what it includes, Shakespeare, Milton, Cervantes, you know, Plutarch, Virgil, Augustine, Boethius. I mean, it just goes on and on. They're in different fields. They're in history. They're in philosophy. They're in theology. They're in political science. You know, they're written all these various fields. If someone reads those in a substantial amount, then they're aware and exposed to really a broad range of education, which very, very few Americans have had, unless they went to a liberal arts college and hopefully even a great books liberal arts college. But Adler absolutely wanted that. He was exposed to it at Columbia in 1922. His teacher was John Erskine, who started this. The program was crushed within a few years because it was interdisciplinary. It didn't meet the pigeonholing that was going on at the time. But Adler carried it on, his first co-moderator. We have two moderators in our classes, two professors usually. His co-moderator was Mark Van Doren, and he won the Pulitzer Prize later. That's what Adler wanted to see, and he was adamant it be done in high school before the demands of life make it impossible. Very few people, there are a fortunate few, but very few people have the luxury of spending 4 years in their 20s, you know, studying the great books and things that don't, that aren't related to specialization in life. So he said, let's get it done in high school. They can definitely do it. He experimented with it. The University of Chicago had an experimental high school that they did it with very successfully, and he did it elsewhere. And he said, do it in high school. Then, you know, when kids get married, you know, and then they don't have time for it. When they get a job, they don't have time for it. It's just too difficult. And but in high school is the time to do it. And that's exactly when the American educational system doesn't do it. It makes sure they don't get it. And that's what Adler wanted to change, and so did Jacques Maritain. And as I said, interestingly, despite resistance from all kinds of quarters, it's happening anyway, and it's happening more and more rapidly.
And then God gave us the internet.
Yep.
I don't think he even envisioned that part, huh?
Well, that's right. And you know, we add classes. Since we don't have to build classrooms and so forth, if we get another 20 students or so that want to do another class, we just add another class. It's really easy. It takes a few minutes. And so people who are doing this kind of thing can expand and address the need just as soon as it arises. It's a wonderful thing. I mean, it's a real benefit of it. We do live classes, of course. And so, yeah, potentially... you know, every student could get this, and hopefully it'll force, you know, due to the nature of competition, it'll force community colleges, actually what we're really after is the high schools getting into this and beginning to offer it. That's going to be a real difficult job because most of the teachers have not read these works and they're very intimidated by them. We also do it in a Socratic fashion, which means a conversational mode that is focused on the text, but the students speak. It's not a you know, 1 hour, 2 hour. We meet for 2 hours a week. It's not a lecture, so it's just droning on the internet. That actually doesn't work very well. But it's a live conversation, and the software allows the students to raise their hand, and they go into a queue, and when the person speaking's mic, when they're finished, their mic disappears, and the next one's activated. So it's a really slick
wow.
Software program, and but yeah, there's no limit to it. You're right. It's and like, you know, the students take Holy Apostles courses. You know, regardless of where they live. I mean, it's really quite remarkable.
All over the world.
All over the world. We've had students from Macau, Botswana, Singapore. I mean, you wonder how in the world they even hear about it, but they hear about it on the internet, you know. They look up their parents at Abu Dhabi.
Yeah.
Just all over, you know. And now if they need books, we'll ship it to them, but the books themselves are available on there, they're free. So we provide links because they're all classics and they're beyond copyright and they're in the public domain. And so students can go read them for free and then we discuss them. You know, and that's a usually a very lively discussion. And that's a big part of it is the discussion because their students can, you know, bounce their ideas off others, listen to how what others got out of it. The two moderators, you know, will contribute things on occasion and begins to model for the students how you do this, how you discuss a work, you know, because rhetoric is now gone. You can't find a public school that offers that or very few, like ethics, gone. You know, some public schools and private schools at the high school level are so dumbed down, it's just, it's frankly terrible. And it's too bad, obviously. It's a great tragedy. And but it's being restored in this manner and others. And but, yeah, the Internet is definitely a very useful tool for this purpose.
You mentioned about Socratic discussions. You participate in Dr. Adler's groups, you said, in Maryland and California.
Right.
In 2000. Tell us a little bit about that and how this helped that program. All these
well, a good friend of mine named Max Wiseman, who runs the Center for the Study of the Great Ideas, if anybody wants to Google that, which promotes Great Books Education and so forth, he had a ticket to attend this. It was a Socratic discussion group. It was going to last 3 days with Adler heading it in Y, Maryland at the Aspen Institute. And he was unable to go due to poor health at the time, and he offered it to me, and
wow.
I went. And it was a wonderful experience, and there must have been 30 people around the table. And the Aspen Institute, by the way, was founded in part by Adler. It's pretty well known now from Aspen, Colorado, but they have a branches all over the place, and one of them was in Maryland. And so that's where I got to know him. The subject was reforming education, so it was perfect for me. And, you know, I got an opportunity to talk with him one-on-one, but we also had these very interesting discussions there. And then the next year, I was invited to the next one, which was in San Mateo, California, at the Embassy Suites, actually. And that's the last one Adler ever did. And that one was 3 days. So we really began to put together how this would work in a homeschool environment and so forth. And fortunately, Adler had written so much about education and in such detail, we were able to piece it together very nicely. And we've really followed him as our guiding star in terms of educational pedagogy for this whole thing. And just a brilliant man. And every time we've wondered about something he did and we went ahead and did it anyway, even if we weren't sure about it, it turned out to be he was right, which isn't surprising because he did it for 80 years.
Wow.
You know, from 1922 at Columbia until he died in 2001. And, I mean, these seminars were, you know, he was in his 90s, you know, incredible. And so it was quite an experience. So it wasn't. It's not purely an abstract effort on our part. We actually knew the man, and obviously that kind of thing helps. Besides, you know, the level of interest and personal.
Man, that was real providence there, huh? Getting that ticket.
It was. So at least in the homeschool environment and online, he's handed us the baton. Now others, you know, obviously he was behind so many programs. Notre Dame has a Great Books program. I think it's 2 years. And as I mentioned, Thomas Aquinas College in California and so many others that have Great Books programs, and people can Google that. By the way, the Center for Study of the Great Ideas, as I mentioned, has a list of colleges and universities. But again, Adler wanted it done in high school, ideally.
Yes.
That's not to say if you didn't get it then you shouldn't do it later. You should if you can, but most people can't. It's simply too expensive, you know. And they have too many other responsibilities by then, you know, typically.
Now, what did you do with those Great Books programs in Seattle when you spoke there?
Well, when we started these programs, we had a live one in Seattle because the three people that helped found it, the others being Steve Bertucci and Tom Orr, we all three lived and we all met Adler. But all three three of us lived in the Seattle area at the time, so we started one in downtown Seattle, and we had our live classes there. And I prefer live ones. There's some obvious advantages to it. There are some advantages to online, but we can't, you know, as a practical matter, we can't do it live because you have to. The three of us, for instance, don't live near one another any longer
yes.
in Colorado. But so it becomes very difficult. Our teachers are actually all over the country at different colleges and universities, or they're retired from that. And so we're able to get the people that we'd like to have teach it, you know.
That's the same as Holy Apostles, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, Holy Apostles offers students can go there on campus or they can do it online. And that's great. You know, if you're able to do it live, there's obviously some advantages to that. It's a more human experience in a way. On the other hand, the online becomes more of an intellectual experience, and that's kind of interesting because, you know, when you're listening to people speaking on the Internet, discussing a great book, a great idea, there's no distraction. You know, it's kind of a...
That's true.
You can look out the window at the trees and, you know, and be listening to the conversation
right.
and not worrying about whether your hair's combed or, you know, that kind of thing. So we actually don't use... We have capability for video conferencing, but we don't use it because we found it distracting. Because, you know, if you have 20 students and their images are there, one of them's always doing something, you know. And so it's kind of distracting. And so all of us, we've been unanimous about this each time we've discussed it. But we've discussed it probably three times over the years. And we always agree it's better to have just a whiteboard up with a map or an image of the person we're talking about or something like that, which we do use. Than to have video conferencing, but it does. I don't want to diminish. There is obviously a pleasing element about having, you know, your interlocutors in the same room and you can see them and get to know them. But believe it or not, friendships develop online in these classes because they're discussing these wonderful works for 4 years together, and so spontaneously for the last 4 years now, the students have. As they graduate, decided to meet at one of their houses around the country, and they've done that. Now, one was in Washington, D.C., and so on.
I've seen that because they've become friends.
Pardon me?
I've seen that at Holy Apostles, too.
Have you? Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm not surprised. They, you know, and also the students can, if they earn this associate's degree I mentioned, they can attend the graduation ceremony
yep.
in Cromwell, Connecticut there, and they're welcome to do so. They don't have to. It can be mailed to them, but... So, you know, we've talked about doing a summer thing in Europe for a couple of weeks for the students, and we may do that later. We don't have it presently, but it's a good idea.
All right. Well, tell us about that award you got at Humanist, the Great Thomas Humanist Award.
I did get an award. That was a... I'm trying to remember what year that was. That was for, I think, a conference in Europe in Poland, which it was a real interesting experience. And it was just basically for work and education. It was just to acknowledge, you know, some of this work that we've all done. And the Etienne Gilson Society awarded it, and so it was quite an honor. It really just acknowledged what we've been talking about, that this is a real, it's a movement to reform education. Now, and I might mention that Dr. Peter Redpath is the chairman of the Angelicum Academy, and Max Wiseman, who I mentioned earlier, is the chairman of the Great Books Academy. And for the listener, by the way, that's greatbooksacademy.org and angelicum.net. But Peter has really been promoting this educational reform effort for now 20 years at least, maybe longer. Brilliant man and Thomist philosopher.
I told him before I went on the air, he's just so confident. He says so enthusiastic. You know, I was a hockey broadcaster, and I got pretty excited, you know.
Yeah, Peter's very enthusiastic, and he's generated a group of people around him who, I don't know, it must be something in the order of 30 scholars. He has a conference every year on Long Island.
Wow.
He's having one this year, and I believe it's in July. And Scott, you know, he attracts scholars from around the world and who are interested in reforming education, because pretty much everybody's aware it's not working well, and the so-called reforms of it simply result in more indoctrination as a rule. So it really needs a more radical reform, and Peter's...
He's radical.
He's radical, and he has terrific ideas. He is, by the way, someone who very much admires Mortimer Adler as well. And
okay.
He probably read all of Adler's 50 books. I haven't read all of them yet. But anyway, Peter is one of the brains behind the educational reform movement.
Wow, I know. And he's going to succeed.
Yeah. Well, you know, what we're doing is in part inspired by Peter's enthusiasm, and,
yep.
And there's quite a few movements around the country that are, the think tank, you might say, meets at that conference on Long Island I mentioned every year. And that, by the way, is mentioned on the Adler Aquinas Institute website. So Adler.
We're on a mission with this radio station, and we don't know how that's going to turn out, but I know I've worked with a priest in Cincinnati, Father Al Lauer, and he died in 2002, and I'm recycling all his programs. He had a 5-day-a-week program on the daily readings.
Huh.
And we had, you know, 25 stations or so across the country. And then there's an app. It's called Laudate. It's a popular Catholic app.
Uh-huh.
And they heard about the program. We hadn't contacted them or anything, had any connection with them at all. And they heard the program, and they called and said, "We want to put your program on." And in one day, we had 40,000 new listeners.
Wow.
So,
amazing.
You don't know what's going to happen with this Internet.
No, and I tell you, education, you know, obviously it touches home. Parents are very concerned.
That's right.
And rightly so about their kids' education, maybe more so than any other area, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, so it gets the attention of people, especially if it's something that they're vaguely aware of, but not, you know, they haven't had the time or opportunity to really give it a lot of thought. As soon as they hear, you know, some of these things from people like Adler and Redpath and so on, it has the ring of truth to it, and they pay attention. And I'm not surprised the audience is growing like that.
Yeah, it's very exciting, and congratulations on all the things you've done already.
Well, thank you.
What an icon, Mortimer Adler, huh?
Yeah, and it's just fortunate that we, you know, knew of him, and actually, I suppose most of us that know one another that are involved in this reform movement, they're all concentric circles emanating from Adler's work. So we cross paths periodically because we're all doing the same thing in different ways, you know.
And, you know, we haven't talked much about the church, but it's so important for the church.
Well, it is. And we have a number of seminarians and things taking our program. And, you know, it's really important they get well-grounded in a generalist education, you know, before they begin philosophy and theology and so forth. So they're well-rounded so that philosophy and theology makes good sense. And so the church has always promoted a classical education. John Paul II wrote about it, St. John Paul, Pope Benedict, and so on. And... It goes all the way back. I mean, Tertullian and St. Basil and so forth promoted the study of the Greeks, meaning their philosophy and so forth.
No question it's going to bring more vocations.
Oh, it will, you know. And these great books programs, the colleges that have them have a much higher vocation rate than other colleges, you know.
Yep. Well, Dr. Patrick Carmack, it was real inspiring to have you with us here tonight on I Thought You'd Like to Know This, which is the name of our program. And we'll be back again, folks, next week, same time, same station, WCAT Radio. And in the meantime, may God bless each and every one of you in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We hope you enjoyed the program and will join us back for another show on WCAT Radio. This is Sebastian Mahfood. Good day.